This is a Baby Brunch podcast. How far have we come in fertility? I mean, is the technology of such a nature that 10 years ago, if we couldn't conceive, I know of a couple that couldn't, that we now are in a position that things have become better?
Yes, I think technology is actually very exciting. The advancement of science is very optimistic. The only thing I complain about is that we can't still differentiate between a male and a female sperm.
This podcast is supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. The range of Epimax Baby and Junior Gentle All-Purpose Emollient Moisturizers is an all-day, everyday favorite for babies and children. Give your child a good start to every day by nourishing and protecting their skin with Epimax. Dr. Q is in studio with me. Q is for Q&A. Made you laugh. Dr. Qinesi Letsele, also known as Dr. Q. I am so impressed by your biography.
Thank you.
You're a role model to every South African woman.
Humbled.
Tell me about what you do.
So Dr. Q is a fertility specialist. She's in the baby making business.
I love that.
She helps the world to grow. She helps families to start over, to increase, and she assists women in their health walk. So whatever gynecological issues, I practice as a gynecologist, I practice as an obstetrician, over and above being a fertility specialist.
We talk about baby making stuff all the time. You know, we're in the game of creating support for parents. And I'm so, when someone tells me that they can help someone on a fertility journey, I feel so lucky. I feel so, so inspired to be around you. Mm-hmm. What is one of the success stories that you've had in your practice where someone felt like they're unable to and then they fell pregnant and created another human?
We've got lots to share. I'm just thinking which one to pick. We've had couples coming in, young couples, where you find that either we've had cases where they find out that men don't have sperm. And we've had to get sperm donation, and the couples have gone on to increase their family, not having just one baby, two babies, you know, and start and finish baby making business with sperm donation. We've had others that come in having been told that you cannot father a child. You know, they even acted out for me that the doctor threw the file on the desk and said you cannot help any woman father a child. And we work with them, walk through the journey, assess where they are, tell them what the goal is. And when they are interested enough and committed enough, we are able to go through processes where they go to treatment, investigations, it's treatment, and they can father their own kids through scientific interventions like IVF and ICSI that we actually offer as well.
So you know how a plastic surgeon gives someone confidence? Dr. Q can, through grace and mercy, create life for you and your family. And that's an amazing gift and so much grace that was bestowed upon you and your business. So for Dr. Q's full biography, we're going to put it available on babybrunch.co.za if you want to find her details and also read more about what she does and who she is. She's got an incredible CV that I think is inspiring for any woman and any person to get through. Infertility. I mean, we've done many conversations here where we talk about the mental health and psychology around children. So before having a baby, what to do, some of the material to read. One of our podcasts that we did recently was how to raise resilient children. So, you know, what to do when the baby is there. Yes. But let's talk about not being able to have the baby just yet. When am I infertile?
That's a good question to ask, because people are not even aware of when is it exactly that we should start worrying? When is there a red flag? And according to the World Health Organization, if any couple is trying to conceive and they are off contraception, off any form of condom or pills or injectables, whatever form of contraception, for at least a year if they are less than 35, or 6 months if they are more than 35. Then,
wow,
they are also having regular intercourse. And a lot of people will be like, oh, Dr. Q, what is regular intercourse? Mm. Is it me having it three times a day? Is it, you know? And regular intercourse basically means having intercourse every alternate day, or at least three times a week.
Right.
You get people who are trying to conceive, but they live in different provinces, in different countries. Now, for a baby to be made, we do need to have some intimacy. So, 6 months if you are more than 35, 1 year or 12 months if you are less than 35, no contraception, regular intercourse, and no baby. Then that's your definition of infertility. You do need to come in and check where exactly the problem lies. And that's what we're here for.
Without humoring the situation, do you find that you have the problem the other way around, that people are too fertile?
Yes. And that's mostly also in other conditions like polycystic ovarian syndrome. Those women have a whole lot of eggs and their fertility reserves are quite high. So we call them like super fertile, and we treat them like walking on eggshells when we work with them, because the treatment of infertility or the drugs that we give during IVF processes can make them to hyperstimulate, and that comes with other complications as well that can make them end up in ICU if you're not careful. So yes, you do get people who have a whole lot of eggs, and that's where egg donors also come in, because those women are the ones that are young, their eggs are of good quality, and they have plenty of them, and they help others.
Now, talking about egg donation, we're going to talk about your egg donation agency shortly. But Dr. Q, staying on the topic of fertility, which is quite exciting for me, you know, how much psychology goes around fertility? I mean, when people, a couple, a same-sex couple, whoever we are, when we come to you for the first time, what do we need to mentally prepare ourselves for? I mean, we can't just arrive and be like, I want a baby. I have these conversations with people and then they'll be like, no, we're not having a baby because it's too expensive. And I'm like, is that the only reason? You know, or is that the reason? You know, we're working towards having a baby like it's a finance thing, you know?
Yeah, put it on budget. Put the baby on budget.
I don't know. So, yeah. I mean, where should we mentally be when we come and see you in order to try and conceive?
Look, it's a very emotionally draining journey, I must say. And it leads to a lot of stress in the relationship.
Right.
Stress socially as well. People already come in with a lot of anxiety. A lot of them, you find that they already have short temper. They're irritable, you know, because they've been going through this already. And they've been called names. You know, in Yumba, they call you Mr. So-and-so if you're a woman and you're not having kids. The stigma is rife out there around infertility. So psychologically, they should be prepared for going under scrutiny. Because already you come in, you know that, you know, people will be like, oh, other people just open their legs and they're pregnant. Other people just look at a guy and they're pregnant. You see women on the streets begging with children. And you already feel like, why me? You understand? And then you're going to come and sit in front of me and I'm going to take you through a journey. And I'm more like an investigative officer. In a kind way, because we investigate to find answers. We investigate to know where the problem is so that we can find solutions. Other people's solutions, I always say, trying to have a baby is like walking into a multi-story building and you know there's a gift of yours somewhere.
Aww.
And you don't know where exactly it is. So some people walk in, it's by the security guard, like, thank you, oh, are you so-and-so? They get it, they walk out. Some people, they have to go one floor up and they get their gift. Some people have to go multiple stories before they walk out with what they're looking for.
You're gonna make me cry.
That's the example.
My multi-story moment.
Because really, and you just need to keep one floor up, you know, one more step until we get there. There's multiple options that we can look at, but it depends which floor are we reaching for.
Why is it such a big deal without making it out like it's not a big deal. Why yeah. are we, you know, when people can't at that moment have, why are we making them feel such shame?
It's society standards, societal standards, unfortunately. I don't know why we treat each other like this. Women don't even feel like going to baby showers because they would like to have that experience, but they're struggling. Or going to family functions because they'll be asked again by their sisters-in-law, by their mothers-in-law. How? They don't even look at them in the eye anymore. The moment they approach, they look at the belly. Like, still, hosa flat. Like, you know, so it's just the societal pressures that are out there. We have couples that end up even divorcing because the relationship is not working anymore. You know, in other countries, women are even killed. Because most times you find that it's the woman that's blamed because she's the one that carries the baby. So if there's no baby, you find that she's the one that's blamed. But infertility, especially for males, they play 50% of the role, 30% being solely male-dependent factors, 20% being male and female factors. So half the time, we're sharing the burden. We're sharing why are we actually not succeeding in what we're trying to achieve. So if people could just understand, before you blame somebody's son or daughter, it could be your own child. We don't know. But let's not blame. Let's assist. Let's offer help.
How far have we come in fertility? I mean, is the technology of such a nature that 10 years ago, if we couldn't conceive, I know of a couple that couldn't, that we now in a position that things have become better?
Yes, I think technology is actually very exciting. The advancement of science is very optimistic. The only thing I complain about is that we can't still differentiate between a male and a female sperm. Because people now, when they do go through the pregnancy, then they'll be like, okay, can we choose the gender? You know, can we select the gender? Mm-hmm. And it's not that easy. The sperm just look the same. The only time we can select the gender, and that's also advancement in science, is when the embryos are made. But we don't, okay, in South Africa, in our country, gender selection is not allowed. It's illegal because it's gender discrimination.
Right.
Okay, so it's regarded as discrimination. In couples that come in and maybe they've had a history of Down syndrome or other chromosomal issues running in the family, DNA abnormalities or whatever conditions that they may have, then they would like to test whether they are transmitting things into their babies or if they've had recurrent miscarriages. Many reasons that we do what we call PGT, which is pre-genetic testing, where when the embryos are made, now we've taken the sperm, we've taken the egg, we fertilize. And remember, now we are overcoming the problem of the fallopian tube.
Right.
Or we are overcoming the problems of sperm. Mm-hmm. Then we assist to make the baby in the lab. And before we transfer to the mother, then we take it under the microscope again. And they take a small sample, which is called a biopsy, of the actual embryo, the cells of the embryo.
And they already have little operations.
Yes, imagine, before they even. Yeah, and then a sample is taken and then they can assess the chromosomes, each chromosome, and check if there's any abnormalities.
Okay.
Yes, so okay. Then you will know that embryo number one has this abnormality, embryo number two has this. That's how then the gender is also determined.
Out of curiosity, so is fertility and visiting a clinic like yours also advisable if you know that in your own family there's been hereditary diseases?
Yes.
Or do we go the route where you carry the baby first and then have all the necessary blood tests done like we've all done who are pregnant with our babies?
Yes. So both options are applicable. So some couples will feel so strongly about this condition that I would never want my child to go through this.
Mm.
Then they would say, listen, we'll rather go through IVF and check all the embryos before we implant them.
Okay.
So that we avoid any chances of actually carrying a baby to a stage where now we are told the baby is 12 weeks, that's 3 months of bonding with the baby, you get the results that the baby is affected by whatever condition, sickle cell or whatever. And then now you want to decide whether you're going to terminate the pregnancy. You need to decide now. Mm. Then it's your responsibility now to say, are we continuing with this life? Then they feel, look, I'm playing God.
Mm.
Now I'm going to say terminate or don't. So then couples like that will say, look, we'll rather do pre-genetic testing where before implantation, we are able to say, okay, these are the ones that are affected. These are the ones that are not affected. And then we avoid transmitting.
So science and God, right? So, so what if we get to the embryo stage and they've done a biopsy and man alive, this baby is healthy and they plant it into the mom. Mm. When the baby's born, things are not so cool. What happens?
Look, there have been cases because now a baby is not fully formed until fully formed and born. So the cells are continually dividing. The cells are continually growing within. Right. So it does not completely eliminate room for the possibility of the baby being affected.
Okay.
But it does give us a fairly good idea of saying, look, from the sample that we tested, this baby is A-OK.
Okay.
So it does happen, but very, very minimal incidents of such happening that then the baby is born with a certain condition. Or sometimes then we do what we call non-invasive prenatal testing, where the mother's blood is taken.
Okay.
And then that also still needs to be done during the process of pregnancy now, just to confirm as well.
And make sure.
Mm.
Couple A wants to have a baby.
Yay.
We're so excited.
Yay. It's always exciting.
I'm so excited. I'm not couple A. I was just being excited for the
We're excited for them.
Thank you.
Hey, it's a good journey to embark on. Hey,
girl,
change.
Dr. Q in the house. So can they decide how many babies they want?
In terms of IVF.
In terms of IVF. So if I can't conceive and I say to you, we would really like twins.
Okay.
Or triplets.
Okay. There's guidelines, rules and regulations that we practice under. The South African Society of Obstetrics and Gynecology and South African Society of Reproductive and Endocrinology then have guidelines. So the recommendation is my duty is to inform you of the implications or the risks of your decision of wanting to have triplets. Now, from science, we've seen that triplets have a high risk of miscarriages. Then you can go through it and you lose all three of them at once, you know, so that's the risk.
Yeah.
We've seen that there's a risk of intrauterine growth restriction for the babies, preterm labor affecting their baby's future health. They have a risk on the babies, and there is also a risk on the mom, because then there's a risk of hypertension, there's a risk of diabetes in pregnancy, there's a risk of preeclampsia, et cetera, et cetera. So it's my duty to inform you of the implications of the decision.
Okay, and I want then, twins.
And then we can say, okay, possibly twins, but even that, the risk is still there.
Okay.
Not completely eradicated by that. So it's now, if you really, really insist and you say, look, two, we don't transfer more than, it's not recommended to transfer more than two embryos because now you're risking baby and mom's life.
Can one not grow?
It can happen. Okay. So when we put in two, you can get your twins, you can get a singleton. And again, it can be unsuccessful depending on the conditions of the womb and the babies and the crosstalk that's between the embryo and the, you know, bashelana inside. And, you know, they woo each other and then implants. And then,
it's so exciting. The baby. Your work is so beautiful.
Oh, thank you, darling. That's what I enjoy about it. The success stories are
beautiful. Yeah, it's amazing.
You are like, I can do this every day.
Why do moms who have a baby who dies inside of them, why do they have to give birth to the baby? Why can't they have a C-section?
Okay. It's not a hard and fixed rule, but if the woman has had a C-section before, she can consider a C-section. Mostly it depends on the gestation, how old was the pregnancy. If it's a very small pregnancy and vaginal delivery can be a possibility. It is recommended because we don't recommend that you have a scar over something that you're not carrying.
Wow.
It's usually better if you go through the delivery and there's no reminder of what you went through, because then that scar usually symbolizes that you gave birth to somebody, and you also have that expectation of carrying that baby. So it's a beautiful seal if there's no evidence. It's just then in the memories that we can work on. But if you can deliver naturally, that's the recommended route. But if maybe then the baby dies inside and your health is at risk, and probably it's an emergency in cases of a rupture and so on, there are incidences where then we can take you for a C-section. But then you'll be having that scar. And I think it's more of an emotional decision more than anything, not about an easy way out only.
A while back, we had a podcast on endometriosis.
Mm.
And when I said to Nadine, the lady that I was interviewing, I said to her, I don't like that they call this a disease, you know?
Okay.
Because it feels like it's here to stay. Doctor, what are you doing? I saw her eyes. I saw your eyes.
Did I give it away there?
Is it here to stay? Once diagnosed, is it here to stay?
Unfortunately, there's no cure. I wish I could be the bearer of the good news
because
and
here's
say,
the thing,
you know
they also say that they don't know where it comes from. It's not like it's hereditary.
It's
like
mysterious.
It is mysterious.
It's a mysterious disease. But some, they get it through family history. For some, it's hereditary. About 7% of women actually get it.
It's like people like you and me in the world, okay?
Oh, yeah. you know, yes. But then endometriosis,
mm-hmm.
It's like one doctor actually gave this example, and it just made sense to me way back in my training. They gave an example of a mushroom field that apparently you get into a mushroom field and you harvest everything, you clean it out, you're done, you're like, great day's job, you go home.
Mm.
You come back the next day.
And it's back.
I guess that's how mushrooms are. I haven't worked in a mushroom field, but I got it. Apparently mushrooms are like that. And endometriosis is like that. We can mop it out today, clean everything, but remember, right. It's also a microscopic. Now I'm scared to say disease.
Yeah, because I've made it. I know.
You made me uncomfortable now.
I know, because it's just, I don't want people to have disease.
I can't call it a phenomenon or an occurrence.
Yeah,
it is a disease. It can be really debilitating for women. Hey, it affects them mentally, affects them socially, it affects their relationships, it affects them physically. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how drastic it is. And I usually say endometriosis is a condition. I'll call it a condition.
Yes.
Okay.
She found it.
It's a condition that makes women to be in pain all the time.
Mm.
And when I teach medical students, I say they will have pain when things come out of them, and they will have pain when things go into them.
Mm.
So when things come out of them, it's when they're menstruating. When blood comes out, they are in excruciating pain. The tearing, the active deposits of the endometrial tissue. Now, it comes from the word endometrium, which is the lining of the womb,
right.
Inside of the womb. So I make an example of a room like this. It's painted white on the inside, then there's a brick, and then it's painted gray on the outside. Now, what happens with endometriosis is this white paint penetrates through the bricks, and then you find it on the blue paint, on the gray painting outside. Then you find it at the neighbor's house. Then you find it on the grass and everywhere, and it shouldn't be there. And then when it's there, it's active. So then there's these white patches everywhere, and they're active all the time. So that's the endometrium. That's the endometrial tissue. So now when they are menstruating, all those deposits are just active. And sometimes even outside of menstruation. And then it causes them so much pain. When they are when the bladder is affected, even when they urinate, it causes a lot of pain. They can bleed when they're urinating right. because now these deposits have gone outside to the neighbor, who's the bladder, and they are active there. And then they can cause the bleeding. Remember, they cause bleeding inside the womb to cause menstruation. Now, where they deposit again, they cause that bleeding. Right. When they do number two, they're in the loo, and then they start bleeding because now the rectum has been affected or the bowel has been affected. You know, it causes pain in the ovary. It grows in the ovaries. It causes what we call cysts, which is an endometrioma. And that causes excruciating pain. You know, they can just roll like a ball. It can even go on to affect the lungs. If it gets into the bloodstream, if it gets into the lymphatic system, then it can affect the whole body. And that's where we don't want to get. So we can clean it out during surgery, but we need something to keep suppressing these tissues right. from growing. That, okay, we've cleaned out, then don't stay out of treatment because there's still microscopic deposits that I can't see with my naked eye during the operation. So we need to suppress, oppress, and repress to just keep it low.
Keep it low.
At least with something a bit long term.
Yes.
So that you don't get this regrowth and continuation of this disease.
Can medication do that?
Yes, that's where medication comes in.
Right.
Yeah, to just
it's wonderful to hear a medical perspective. It's so interesting. Obviously, I know a lot of women who suffer from it and who have it, and some have had surgery.
Yeah,
and it's good to know that there's help.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, yes, that, there's options
that you can help.
Yes, yes. I've got a lady currently that's pregnant. She was referred by a gynae in Mpumalanga, another province, and here to me because they wanted to fall pregnant. So he had operated her first to treat the endometriosis. She just had severe endometriosis and the cysts in the ovaries and all of that. And then that endometriosis has already affected her fallopian tubes, which kinked, and the adhesions that were happening on the inside. It's a very aggressive condition, unfortunately, and especially when it comes to fertility. So when they came to me, I assessed them, and it was soon up after the op. And this is towards the end of last year, around October. And when I assessed them, already this cyst was coming back. It was so stubborn. We gave her medication, told her to go away, treated her for like, okay, then it must have been just before October. Treated her for like 3 months on medication alone. But then with the fact that she was on medication, then I knew that even though the cyst is persistent, we drained it at some point in my theater, not really taking her for another operation. And by the time we started stimulating her for IVF, because her tubes were now affected, that cyst was back again. And I was like, we're not going to hear from you. We are going ahead with our treatment. And I knew it was not an active one currently because we had put her on so much medication. So the 2 days ago, we got her pregnancy test results.
And it's positive. Is she pregnant?
She is praise like so pregnant.
There we go. Like,
tell you. And
you're like a movie. You kept me in such suspense for 5 minutes.
Like, man, seriously.
She's like,
I'm telling you the whole story. All
it's like, we will be back when the birth of the baby who wasn't.
I'm so glad.
She's pregnant. Now, the funny part is I got my nurse to actually call her and give her the good news. And then the nurse calls in. We're all excited. Like, we are like so excited. You could swear we're pregnant, you know? And then we're like, hey. The nurse gives her the news. It was over the weekend. And then she's like, I know.
She knows.
She knows.
She took a test.
She's Hyman. Like, I promise you. I know. And we're expecting the thrill. Like, usually when we call people, it's like, yo, it's a party. I know. I'm sure she was just blowing her hair.
You should have said to her, with two babies. No, I'm kidding. Don't tell her that.
It might as well could be the way that beta ACG is climbing up because we do it again after 48 hours.
So you'll know.
We'll know when we're doing the sonar. At the 6 week sonar, yes. And when we'll see how many heartbeats.
You have to keep us updated.
We
now.
Are excited.
By the time this podcast comes out, we'll know whether there's one baby or two. That's amazing.
Oh, I tell you, like, it makes...
You're making my day. You are like the bearer of good news, man.
Yeah. So the possibilities are there.
So tell me, so there's an egg donation agency. Previously on Baby Brunch, we had, I was in disbelief, a podcast on egg donation and an agency. I subsequently have learned that you can also... there's a model agency out there as well somewhere where you can choose the eggs of people who are good looking. You get a catalog and you can choose really good looking. I mean,
like, yeah, you can choose the eye color. I tell you, the color of the hair. You can choose complexion.
So what does your egg donation agency do?
It's called Miracle Gift. We are online. Yes, the name itself, because it is so miraculous. Hey, we give hope to people who've already given up on life or on themselves. And the amazing part, I see, like, the metamorphosis of people. Hey, I see the stages, because people come in, even self-care is no longer an issue.
I can imagine. Yeah. Because you're sad.
Yeah. You're like, life has been just so bitter. It's rough cut, you know? And then when they go through egg donation, they carry those babies. The opposite happens. Most women then will come back when they have a 6-week-old and they are like all worn out. You know, the ones that go through egg donation, it's amazing. It's like they become refreshed. They become alive again. They find sense to life. They find meaning to life. They find purpose. Yes. They're like, yeah, I can do it. My body did this, you know? And it doesn't really matter that the DNA is not yours. You were assisted. The truth of the matter is, no questions asked, medically, legally, and otherwise. No, I carried this baby. I gave birth to this baby. I don't need papers to prove it. It's my baby.
Well, I don't need papers to prove that you're amazing. You are just, what a breath of fresh air, right? It's like, how? Dr. Qinisile Cele, with 4 children.
I practice what I preach.
Hey, girl. How old's your eldest?
13, 10,
and the
14.
Youngest is 4.
The youngest is 4.
Amen. You're 4 years old. I love a baby. Cute. Don't even get me started.
Oh.
I will babysit anytime.
Oh, really?
Actually, I want to be the auntie. I want to cook for them. And they must play. Oh. And we must bake bread.
You'll
and
play
pizza
the
pie.
Rich aunt, hey?
Oh, look at her. I'm wealthy because I have lots of children.
Amen to that.
Oh, listen. Familymatters.co.za. You can find out more on our website, babybrunch.co.za. We're going to put Dr. Q's entire biography there, together with a link to where you can find out more about them. You know what? We haven't even touched on half her practice, but you must actually, I'm going to lure you to the website. On babybrunch.co.za, you will find out more, because Dr. Q doesn't just have a fertility agency. She doesn't just help people with donations, and I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about her egg donations agency. She also is in the business of giving people confidence. Find out more on familymatters.co.za or Baby Brunch.
This podcast was supported by Epimax Baby and Junior. Epimax Baby and Junior is dermatologist approved, free of artificial colorants and fragrances, and is safe to use from birth. Touch, nourish, love your child's skin with Epimax Baby and Junior. Available from leading pharmacies and retail stores.